Welcome to the Samantha J. Murphy Show, where we talk about life, love, health, and well-being, and work towards building a happier life through conscious awareness and positive change. Hello and welcome to the Samantha J. Murphy Show. I'm your host, Samantha J. Murphy. Thank you for tuning in this week. Before we get started, please subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already, so you don't miss out on any future episodes. And if you get a spare minute, please give us a review because your feedback is always appreciated. Now, on to this week's episode. And today I have a very special guest on the show. He's a mental performance coach who's based in New Zealand and specializes in helping people from a variety of backgrounds to gain a mental edge over their competition and build a positive winning mindset to help achieve their goals. He's the author of the book From Why Me to Try Me, and has been featured on a number of podcasts and articles around the globe. So let me introduce and welcome to the show, Curtis Weeks.
Hi, Sam. Thank you for having me.
Oh,
for the introduction.
You're welcome. Yes, you're welcome. It's a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for taking the time. So I just want to start off by asking you, Curtis, if you can tell us a little bit about your background and what was it that led you to become a mental performance coach?
Yeah, for sure. So I grew up in New Zealand on the North Shore of Auckland. I guess life happened to simplify it. I'm a Māori, which is like the indigenous people of New Zealand. Right. I'm a fair-skinned Māori. So I experienced a lot of racism growing up, pretty much my whole life, even still to this day, especially around being Māori. So just a lot of racism. I was chubby, you know, like I just had a real victim mentality, and that's why I wrote my book From Why Me to Try Me. So that's a book about being in a victim mentality to becoming a leader. Just through life, I was fat, overweight. I was the victim, you know. I played the victim until I didn't. And once I discovered that everything is in your control and everything starts in the mind, that's when things started taking off. I served in the Royal New Zealand Navy for 13 years. 4 years of that was as a physical training instructor, and 9 years of it was as a chef. So I enlisted as a chef, did my time, spent a total of about 5 years at sea, and just going through that process in life, which was like just military, you know, that calls for a lot of mental and physical attributes that, you know, you need to just keep pushing on. And while I was doing the whole physical training thing, I hit my ceiling pretty fast, and I discovered that I actually had a passion for the mental performance side, while I was serving, I would help people not only get the physical edge over whatever competition or whatever task or deployment that they need to do, I also discovered a way to bring out their true potential, especially people that really doubted themselves, or, you know, didn't have the push, or, you know, just had all that self-doubt and anxiety and just listened to other people's opinions and accepted them. So from there, I really grew that passion to bring the best out of people. And then, yeah, so I seeked advice from a mentor of mine, and he suggested that I have a look at NLP through the Tad James Company. And so I did. Then I did all that coursing. So just having those, I guess, certificates qualifies me to become a mental performance coach. And then from there, I've just taken the ball and ran with it. Mainly, I started off working with fighters because that's my background as well. So growing up being bullied, all that stuff, and being the victim, I needed to, I guess, take control of my own situation in my life. So learning how to fight for me was a big thing. And once I learned how to fight, it saved my life. Like, fighting saved my life because it built this confidence that I didn't have growing up. And I became the person who I always needed, you know, like when I was getting bullied or pushed around, experienced any sort of racism, I needed someone there. but no one was there for me. So I became that person, and now I'm that person for many other people. You know, I'm there for them, helping them unlock their true potential, and yeah, just helping them grow.
Right. So did you find when you was working with the fighters, obviously you said you got into that yourself, did you find that that was really healing for you with all the stuff that you'd been through, actually helping other people become mentally tougher and be able to be more confident?
Yeah, very much so. And I could relate to them on so many different levels as well. And yeah, that's something that they really enjoyed, because I had been there, and before they could tell me the emotions they were experiencing, I'd lay it out for them, and they're like, that's exactly how I'm feeling. So because I'd been there, it was a lot more relatable for me, and yeah, very healing, and yeah, a massive amount of satisfaction.
Yeah, I think sometimes the negative experiences people have, they look at them at negative, but as you say, it actually helped you to become the coach that you are, because you can use that knowledge to share with people that are going through the same thing. So I think it's valuable really to have those experiences. It's never a bad thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Because there's so many levels of learning you can take from each situation. And instead of just holding on to that negative emotion and, you know, letting it get you down, you just take a step back, have a look at the whole situation, and then learn from that, then release all the negative emotion, and you're wiser for it, because that's what wisdom is. You know, it's just knowledge with the experience.
Exactly. So can you tell us a little bit about what you do? So if a client comes to you, what's the first step?
So the first thing I talk about are my pillars. So I've got a 5-pillar system, and that just lays the foundation for everything else in life. And from there, once I've laid all of that down for them, I just listen. That's all I do. I just listen with intent. I'm listening for limiting beliefs. I'm listening for things where they could do better. And then I just give them suggestions. I'll give them tasks that they need to do before our next meeting. And then I relate everything back to the 5 pillars. Yeah.
Right. Is there a different way that you deal with like a regular person coming into you for your coaching than you would if you was, say, coaching an athlete? Is there a different way of doing it, or same principles?
Not really. No? Yeah, same principles. It's crazy. The principles are the same. So yeah, like I said, I started with fighters, and then I've slowly branched out working with business people, business owners, CEOs. And yeah, it's crazy how the system works for everything, all aspects of life.
Right. What would you say to someone who knows that they need to make some sort of change in their life, but really don't know where to start? What would you say to them, being someone that was in an experience like your past, where you was at a kind of low point and didn't really know where to go? What would you say to, because I'm sure there's people out there that are listening that feel they want to make a change, they're not happy, and they need to do it. What would you say to them?
Well, so Philip, pillar number one is know your outcome. Always know the outcome. So right there, figure out what you want. What is the outcome?
Right.
So once you have your outcome, and the difference between an outcome and goals, our goals are like stepping stones to get you to your outcome. The outcome is the end result, regardless of time. So once they know the outcome, from there, they know where they can start. You just start reverse engineering it. You know, you start putting in significant events that need to occur to make this come true. And once they've got those, then they have a starting point. And from that starting point, you start, you know, like that's
right. You have to work out where you're going first. That
exactly.
Makes a lot of sense. And then I guess what you're saying is that you can put those smaller goals in between that you aim towards, and then it's one step at a time in the direction.
That's it. Yeah. Every now and then pop your head up, make sure that you're on track, and then get your head back into the trenches.
What would you say to people that are starting on the journey how do they stay on track? Is there any words of encouragement that you would say, or techniques that you would give them to stay on that track? Because I know sometimes it can be easy to get distracted or kind of fall off of the way you're going.
Yeah. So we all have like a hierarchy of values. Whatever we're doing in life, there's a hierarchy of values, whether it's with you and your podcasting, you know, there'll be some values there, just in life, health, fitness. So what you need to do is figure out your values first. From there, that breeds your beliefs, and then your beliefs breed behavior. So once you've got those values, figure out your why. And I hear this so often, you know, like make sure that your why is bigger and like super important so that you can leverage off it. And there's a technique I use, and it's called Seven Whys Deep. Well, that's not the name of it from other professionals in my field, but it's just what I've called it, Seven Whys Deep. And so once you've got your values and everything, why is it important? Like, why is whatever you're doing, the task, the goal, exercising, whatever, why is it important? And then you'll get an answer. From there, you ask yourself, why is that important? You'll get a different answer. And you just keep going down until you get to the seventh one. So you may ask the question why about maybe 3-4 times, and you're answering with your mind. You're like, oh, to look better, you know, so I can do this X, Y, Z, whatever. Once you start getting past the third, fourth, maybe even the fifth why, you start answering with your heart, and it starts getting a bit emotional, and it starts bringing up some events that may have happened in the past where you're like, actually, I grew up being bullied, and I don't want that to ever happen to anyone that I love ever. So that becomes a why. And then why is that important? You know, and it gets deeper, and you start answering it more with the heart and the soul rather than with your mind. And once you get to that seventh why, that there is your true why. So when you are struggling, you know, you're feeling uninspired or whatever it is, you can leverage on that true why. Well, the reason I'm doing this is because of this. Sweet, right. Let's go and get some.
Yeah, I think it's very important for people to, even if they talk out loud to themselves or write things down and just say it to themselves, and then you tend to come up with the answers where you just, like you say, asking the questions, because you know deep in you, you've got the answers, like you say, why you're doing something. It's just sometimes you have to sort of dig a little bit deeper to get to the true feelings that you're feeling. Can you tell us a bit about your book, Curtis, because it looks fantastically interesting?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so From Why Me to Try Me, it's a book about my life through my eyes, how I experienced life, and just adversity that I overcame or that I didn't. And I use my life as a vessel to help guide other people, and the feedback I've received has been amazing, especially from all walks of life. So yeah, I just use specific examples in my life where I either chose to be a victim or a victor. So yeah, it's not only a story of my life, but it could be used as a tool, and it's very relatable. And that's the reason I wrote it, was to relate with as many people as I could, especially around that victim mentality and that why me attitude. Because especially during these times, you know, with COVID doing its thing, it's so many people choose to be the victim because it's the easier option. You know, like, why is this happening? Why me? Pretty much. So I give the tools in my book to, I guess, see it. And instead of thinking, why me? Okay, roll up the sleeves, try me, let's get it done.
Well, your prime example of someone that has overcome that victim mentality, and so I think it's very important that your story is out there like that, because a lot of people, like you say, can relate to your experiences. And I know it can be tough for a lot of people that have been stuck in a victim mentality for a very long time. And to be able to pull themselves out of it with using people like you, coaches, and reading books like your book is so inspiring. And I think it's wonderful that there's people like you out there doing this kind of work, because it is very important that the mental side of yourself, you have to be right there first, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Because when you think about it, everything starts in the mind. Everything.
Yeah.
If you're overweight and you want to lose weight, it starts upstairs first. Like, you have to come up with, I guess, your why. You know, why am I doing this? Why do I feel this way? You know, and usually being overweight comes with that victim mentality. And I'm speaking from experience. Some people out there may not feel the same, but me personally, when I was overweight, borderline obese, it was a very strong victim mentality where whatever went wrong to me wasn't my fault, you know, and I was always asking why me.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to take some kind of responsibility for yourself when you're wanting to make a change. And just to ask you, Curtis, was there a turning point for you? Was there something that particularly happened that made you go, right, that's it, I'm not going to do this anymore? Or was it a combination of different things over a period of time?
Yeah, I'd say there are many turning points, but there are subtle ones. So yeah, it was the first one would have been joining the Navy, because yeah, I was just I was hanging out with the wrong crowd, and an event went down where I seen my future. I was just like, shit, if I hang out with these people, I'm going to prison. If I go to the military, at least I'm not going to prison. So that was like the first step. Plus, I was still fat then. So then I joined the Navy, lost heaps of weight. And that was, I guess, the first proper turning point. Then as I sort of graduated through all the training and whatnot, I had never experienced that much freedom in my life. Because instead of doing my last year of high school, I joined. So yeah, I had so much freedom. So I turned to alcohol and I hit the substance abuse like something crazy, and then I got fat again, you know. there was another turning point. Once I was fat, I was real bad. I had a toxic attitude. I had a big chip on my shoulder. Whenever I would be drinking or be at the pubs or the clubs, picking fights with people, and my friends didn't like that. They didn't enjoy being around me, especially when I was drinking. Even when I was playing rugby, so I could grow up playing rugby and rugby league. So when I'd play rugby, I'd be starting fights on the rugby field. And then, it was no good at all. So a turning point that happened there while I was fat again was one of my mates just told me outright. He was just like, "Ah, you're looking fat, man." And I was like, "Oh, damn." So yeah, that's when I got into fighting as a sport, and I noticed that really chilled me out. And then the hunger just grew to continue bettering myself and trying to help others around me. And then there are many more turning points. On my physical training instructor course, the first one, where I really appreciated mental resilience, we had to track through some snow. So before that, this was a survival phase on our course, and we were in the jungle or bush, whatever you want to call it. And we were told that we'll be tracking up through some snow or through the mountains later on that day. So I asked the question if we'd have time to put on the correct wet weathers at the bottom of the hill or bottom of the mountains. And the instructor said, yeah, of course. So when we got there, being the military, we were given some tasks and whatnot to, which was just a simple task of creating a fire in the snow and then making a hot drink before we ascended up the mountain. And I was really good at making fires. I sort of perfected it and whatnot, but for some reason I couldn't do it in that moment. And my fire wasn't going. Everyone else's were, and their water was boiling. My water was still cold. I was just like, oh, I need to get this fire going so then I can get changed. Long story short, I didn't have time to put on the correct wet weathers. and we started ascending the mountain. So I was like, oh, it's okay. Like, this isn't too bad. It was just an overcast sort of day. Like, the mountain disappeared in the clouds, and we started heading up. Started off with the snow. It was only ankle deep, and I was like, yeah, this isn't too bad. And then it got to like knee deep, and I was like, oh, yeah, this is bearable. Then it was like waist deep at some moments, and I was like, oh, this is getting a bit shit now. Because I just had cotton pants on pretty much, so they were wet.
Oh, no.
It was cold. I had like a wet weather jacket on, like a balaclava and some gloves, but they weren't the correct ones. And then we hit like a blizzard. And it got bad real fast, like, wow. Real fast. Yeah, so the rain was coming in hard and fast. The winds were something crazy. They're over 60 kilometers. It was crazy. So I couldn't breathe with my balaclava on because it felt like I was being waterboarded. So when I pulled it down, it just felt like needles on my face. My hands were numb. My gloves, because they weren't the right ones, they were saturated, and my hands were turning into little icicles. And I was in charge of our group. So I had to make sure everyone was sweet every step of the way. So the way I did it was just every minute or so, I'll just do little check-ins, tell some jokes to keep morale high. Wow, there was one time we almost blew off a cliff, which was pretty scary. But like, hey, we're all right. And then when we were about 10 minutes from one of the huts that we were going to, our guide, who was, I guess, the professional or the SME, he took off. He just left us. He beelined for the hut, and it was real bad. Everyone was stuck there trying to figure out what was going on, but we just persevered. We just one foot in front of the other until we got to the hut. And then I hit a hypothermic state once we got there. So yeah, it was real bad. But that there was when I really, like, truly discovered what mental resilience was, because instead of focusing on the bad things that were happening, I was just focusing on putting one foot in front of the other, ensuring that the team were doing okay, because no one was doing well. It sucked. I just tried to keep the spirits up, and we got there, hit the hypothermic state. And then the guide, he was saying, like, if we're out there for another 10 minutes or so, it would have got real bad real fast.
That sounds awful.
Yeah, it was definitely life-changing.
But you know what, that it's interesting what you say there, you know, the mental resilience and strength that you have to find in situations that can be really quite challenging, and that's a prime example there. I think you can relate that to everyday situations in life where you're in a situation that can be, you think, is absolutely disastrous. And in that moment, that's where you can make a decision whether you want to sink or swim, whether you want to see the positive in it and go, okay, what do we do about this? Or you just go, oh, I can't do anything about it. And just, you know, so it is so important, isn't it, to get that mental strength like that. It really is life-saving.
Yeah, like literally. I mean, because if I was to break down and just be like, whoa, what, why me? Like, why, like, help me, someone help me.
Try exactly.
And that was the attitude I took. But yeah, if I had decided to ask for help and whatnot, I would have put my team at risk, and then we all would have been in some serious trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you see people through Zoom or stuff like that remotely as well as in person? So you do that, so you could see people from all over the world then?
Yeah. So so COVID, even though it's a bad thing or a negative thing, it changed the game, and it made everything online. I see people here in my office, and then I also see a lot of people online. I've worked with people over in the States, Canada, Australia, France as well, in the UK. So it's good.
That's great, because I'm in the US, but I've got quite a lot of listeners in other countries as well, so that'll be quite nice that they can get in touch. Now, if they wanted to book a session with you, Curtis, do they just go through your website?
Yes. Yeah. So go through my website, coachcurtisweeks.com, Curtis with a C, or through my Instagram. So I've got two Instagrams. One's my business, one's my personal one. So either one, my business one is coachcurtis.weeks, and my personal one is curtisweeks.me or underscore me. And yeah, I'm very active on Instagram. So that you'll get a quick reply from me.
Okay. And if they want to purchase your book, where is it again, the website where they can purchase your book? Is there any other outlets or is it just on your website?
Well, yeah, it's on all online platforms or all online bookstores. So, yeah, okay. They can go on Kindle, iBooks, whatever, or just go to my website and it's there. I'm still trying to work on getting a big publisher to publish it. But, so far no one can at the moment is the message that's come back, which is real disheartening, but it's okay. I'll just keep chipping away at that.
Well, it's out there anyway, isn't it? So that's people right. can get hold of it. It doesn't matter. People can still read it, which is what's important. Just wanted to finish off. So I know that on Instagram, for people that are not aware with your Instagram, sort of daily you do lovely little videos which are really sort of positive and inspiring, and I really enjoy them when you pop up on them. That's a good one. You know, for people that it would be good for people to follow you on your Instagram, and they can sort of see the work you do and the positive message that you give. And then if they want to book an appointment with you, what would be, is it a course of sessions that you do? Is it depend on each person?
Yeah, so it does, it depends on each person. Some people just need one session. Others need 10, 20. Right. So yeah, it just depends on the individual.
Okay, great. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us today, Curtis. It's been really interesting. Lovely talking to you. And I hope people rush out and buy your book and book some appointments with you and get into that strong mental mindset, because it's so important.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me, Sam.
All right. You're welcome. Take care. Bye.
You too. Bye.
Well, that's it for this week's episode. As usual, I'll be posting this episode on Instagram, SamanthaJMurphy7, Facebook, SamanthaJMurphy, and Twitter, SamanthaJMurph7. So if you'd like to add any comments or interact with each other on these platforms, please do, because your experience could help somebody else. And if you know anyone that would benefit from listening to this, please feel free to share it with them. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Cheers.